Thank you all for coming back for another fun-filled day. And hello to everybody listening on the phone. We're going to kind of juggle the schedule a little bit today. We do have some things to get to, but I think we've got a little bit of time built in, so we should be pretty good to go. Just wanted to kind of recap the day yesterday and see if anybody had any thoughts or comments. I know we had a chance to reflect a little bit on the activities last night. So how is everybody feeling today about the work that was done yesterday? Any comments, any outstanding issues we need to address? Rick, you got something? Yes, we kept the UNC folks working hard last night, and we're going to get to some of their revisions and such in a moment here. Anything else that's outstanding issues? Rick?
Yeah, I just wanted to, a few things. I thought y'all did a great job yesterday. I thought the panel did a great job. I wanted to do one clarification and then make a little comment back on part of our conversation yesterday. You know, I realize that sometimes when I engage in hyperbole, you know, about how much I hate patient satisfaction and maybe get the wrong impression, I actually think it's quite important. Quite important. And it's a good indicator of our doctor-patient relationship. But I want to tell you, to clarify my comments, because it goes back to our comments yesterday, I actually believe it's created, a lot like Art said, too much focus on the wrong thing, because it's a trailing indicator. And so the best people can't do well in a bad system. And so if your system's the problem, and what you do is you tell the staff, don't forget to be nice, make some nice comments, give a cookie, then you're really not fixing the problem. And so it goes back to this discussion about patient-centered outcomes versus patient-centered processes. A system is nothing more than a collection of processes. And if those processes are not patient-centered, and I think, you know, trauma is a good example where the resources are delivered to meet the needs of the patient. STEMI is a good example where the resources have been redesigned to meet the needs. Then we're not going to have, we're not doing the right thing. So I would actually urge we go back and put in not just patient-centered outcomes, but patient-centered systems or processes. Because those processes are what's driving the outcomes we want.
Would that be a guiding principle, do you think?
Under the guiding principles, okay. Yeah, I'd like to go back and make a point of that's really the issue. I mean, I got to sit there. I get a lot of time at 100 and some hospitals. They come in, someone's got bad patient satisfaction. You go in there, and what you realize, the waiting room times are an hour and a half, or 3 hours, or 5 hours. And then what they're doing is they're focusing on what they're going to do to make the doctors and nurses make the patients happier. Well, the process is wrong, and so I just want to make sure we understand there's a difference there.
That's a very good point. I was looking back last night over the guiding principles, and I just wanted to make sure that the group felt comfortable. Kind of building off what you were saying, Rick, I know we talked in great deal at the IOM and then out in Phoenix about, regionalization is not centralization. I think we've captured that point, you know, very well in the guiding principles. But also this concept that Christy kind of alluded to yesterday where, you know, it's not necessarily always moving the patient. We can move the knowledge, we can move the resources, we can move the expertise through a lot of these innovative, you know, mechanisms that are out there now. And kind of looking back through our guiding principles, I don't know that that's really expressed as much as maybe it should be. And welcome your comments on that, but I think it kind of goes to the point that you were making.
I agree with you that you quoted it well, that it's about getting the resources to the patient in the right place at the right time. I mean, I've never transferred a patient to poison control. Okay. But I call them, and they follow the patient, and they deliver the knowledge to the bedside with a plain old phone. And I don't think people, that's why I told you earlier, I'm not a big fan of the word regionalization, not because it's not a good issue, but because in our mind, we threw it into the old model, so sometimes we have to find a way to show that new model, so maybe we need to be explicit.
Any other thoughts or comments on the discussion yesterday, guiding principles, anything you'd like to add or omit? Okay, very good. So just kind of an overview of what we're going to do today. As we talked about yesterday, we are going to break into small groups, and we'll do that for approximately an hour. And like I said, these times are a little bit, you know, kind of loose this morning, but around 9 or 9:30, somewhere in that time frame, we'll break into the small groups, and Eric will fill us in more on the details of that. So we'll talk in small groups for about an hour, and then we'll reconvene as a whole group and kind of, they'll put some stuff up on the screen, and we've got easels in the room for the small groups to utilize to really look at the buckets, the domains, and then some of the items that actually go into those buckets to help, you know, look at a whole picture of a regionalized emergency care system. So that should take us almost till noon. We'll do the lunch break. We will come back around 1 o'clock and recap the priorities for the second draft. And there was a little confusion yesterday, so I just want to make sure we're all clear. The charge from the committee back to UNC will be the second draft of the framework. The environmental scan is done, and that's a background document. It's a resource for us to use, but we won't be making any substantial edits to that document. We will be looking to redraft the framework with all the hard work that we've done the last 2 days. So we'll go through that and give the charge to UNC, and then we'll do the member and public comment, and then we'll just briefly discuss the summary and next steps. And as we saw yesterday, the timeline is pretty tight, so we'll just review that to make sure everybody's on the same page. Yes, sir.
Andy, there. Forgive me for not bringing this up 2 minutes earlier, but I was still sort of forming my thoughts. I think one thing that we have not touched on, and one huge elephant in the room in terms of emergency services, is the obvious fact that emergency care, and particularly resuscitation, really begins in the field with a workforce that is widely varied in terms of its skill level, preparation, and source of compensation. That is to say, huge number of volunteers who are large on heart, but not necessarily always perfect in terms of execution. We all know that the first few moments of care in the emergency care system are largely what make the difference. We can have a tertiary, quaternary level ICU care all we want, but if we haven't begun the resuscitation in an effective and timely manner and transported the patient to definitive care, whether that care begins in a community level hospital or in an academic center, the outcomes are not going to be good. And as we think through the issues of quality standards, I think that a huge opportunity for improvement really exists in the pre-hospital realm, where quality improvement efforts, as you know, have been hit or miss. Despite the valiant efforts of a huge number of people, Tommy Wolakino among them, I'm not exactly sure how a group like the NQF could begin to influence the development of true quality improvement in the field, but I think it's a nut that has to be cracked if we're going to make significant progress in terms of improving the quality of emergency care nationwide.
I think that's a great point, Art. And, hopefully this framework, when we're setting it up, we can take some of those issues into account and look at, standardized curriculum and training and some of the issues that Nick kind of alluded to yesterday. But I completely agree with you. And being a field provider myself, it is very hit or miss. And, looking back from where we were in the 1960s all the way to today, it's a little bit amazing we're not kind of further down the path. So, Skip?
I think when we look at the out-of-hospital component of the emergency care system, the discussion frequently goes toward exactly where Dr. Cooper went and talks about the large amount of the landmass of the United States that's served by volunteers. But I don't think we should let that serve as an obstacle, because if you look at it differently and look at who the majority of out-of-hospital patients are, you would probably find, if anybody ever did the study, which, like so much of out-of-hospital stuff, is not adequately studied, that most of the patients are actually touched by full-time career personnel of some sort or other, because they're in major metropolitan and heavily populated areas. But two areas where this group might make some contribution to pushing the pre-hospital care world along is in the use of technology and getting the out-of-hospital care system from the very beginning linked into the healthcare information system that's going to grow over the next many years. And while we always try and focus on outcome measures, those are impossible if you don't have intelligent processes built. So we may want to look at some process measures in the out-of-hospital world to look at intermediate steps of performance of EMS systems in communities. We can't get to a good outcome at the end of the hospital stay without a good EMS system. But we don't quite know scientifically what that means yet, and some process measures could help push us there.
Those are all good points, and I certainly think there's room in our domain for our care coordination to, you know, really look at those issues about, is the pre-hospital medical record actually integrated into the in-hospital medical record, and, you know, if so, great. If not, you know, why not? And I kind of agree with you in some degrees about the standard of care, and I know we struggled with this at, you know, the National Fire Protection Association when we did the 1910 and 1920 and all those standards. You know, so I think this group does have to do a little reflection, and really at the end of the day, is a paramedic in Chicago the same as a paramedic in, you know, rural Montana? Should you be provided the same level of care? You know, like it or not, there is great variation across this nation, and I don't know that we're going to fix that in this room today, but, you know, are we at a point now where a nurse should be a nurse, a doctor should be a doctor, and a paramedic should be a paramedic? And I think in a pre-hospital environment, as we've seen across all the states, it's not necessarily comparing apples to apples all the time, and I think there might be some opportunities here to at least address that. Tom?
Yeah, to follow what Skip's saying here, when we talk about record linkage, you think about the pre-hospital record, but in a lot of systems, the pre-hospital component is not a single entity as well. And I know in my own system, you know, we have fairly good linkage between the EMS component where the paramedics are, and the hospital, and being able to get those records together, but there's no reflection of the first response system at all. The fire department goes out first. Are they part of the system? They're getting there first. They're getting someone, an EMT, on the scene before anybody else is, and largely what they're doing and what they're accomplishing is not recorded at all because they're handing it off to my system, who that's where the record begins, and I think we're missing a huge amount of data there.
Well, and Tommy, as you know, a lot of times those first responders don't get paid, so that even furthers the problem of, well, why are we documenting this if we're not going to get reimbursed? So, and we could spend a whole 3-day session on that, I'm sure.
Well, yeah, and when you bring that up, the system that requires transport for pay, and I know we've all heard this in many, many meetings over the years, but and when we talk about bringing technology into the field and telemedicine and those things, there's many things that the pre-hospital system can do to move patients more efficiently, in some cases past the emergency room, directly to a cath lab, something like that. A lot of times there's an opportunity to fix a problem and bypass a hospital entirely by putting them into the primary care arena, take care of their problem on site and refer them to somewhere other than an emergency room. But all these things are going to take the technology and the connections, and there's going to have to be a funding mechanism so that I can be paid for providing the service. The physician or intermediate provider on the other end is able to be compensated and protected for their role in it. And you're right, we could talk about that all day.
Nick?
And I would like to add to my distinguished colleagues, the pre-hospital care record begins before they see EMS. It begins with the EMD dispatch call triage steps, and there's quite a lot of data that is collected at that point in time and stored and recorded, but by and large it's not used for outcomes or patient evaluations or tying back in initial presentation over the phone to the care that was received in the pathway. So I think it would be, we'd be well served to bring that link as early into the chain as possible. My second comment was about Dr. Cooper's comments. I appreciate what he had to say about the pre-hospital arena. And there are many areas of the country, geographically large, where the ambulance services have no quality assurance, no quality improvement activities taking place. And their main focus and quality is just making sure an ambulance responds. So they're at such rudimentary levels of quality improvement or quality management that a lot of this will be right over their heads because it's not where their planning and thinking is. So I think that we'd be well served to make sure that the draft speaks to their needs and provides some mechanism to help that bring them into it.
Those are really, really good points. And, you know, before I came here, I actually graduated high school in a small rural town with 24 other kids. So I've lived a rural life and could definitely appreciate just trying to get the ambulance out the door at 3 in the morning. Very good point, very well taken. And I lean at Nick and Gary and Tommy and a few of our other, you know, folks with rural experience to make sure that we're not, you know, going too off track and that. Mike?
I just want to provide a little slightly different view that to me the whole genius of this approach and why we're here today is it's got the opportunity to kind of turn that system around. So what I'm hearing a lot of sort of top-down approach, we need to improve training. And really what we're talking about is more of a bottom-up approach here. If you actually measure stuff and you get different people engaged in who then start to pay attention. So in the local community, if the pre-hospital care is bad, then the hospital's quality measures aren't going to look very good in that regionalized system, and they're going to get interested in wanting to make it better. And that's going to really, I think, make a huge difference. And different communities are going to solve that problem in different ways. And some places may choose, say, not to have paramedics at all because it just isn't a good way to use their resources. And I think that we would be wise to not be too prescriptive about that and rather to let various communities figure that problem out for themselves. There's plenty of resources about how to do that.
Good point, good point. Dr. Cooper?
Yeah, very briefly, I raised the issue because I fundamentally agree with Mike. I think the question for us here is how can a group like the NQF, you know, creatively, you know, address this problem through creation of, you know, a benchmark that or suggestion of a benchmark or creation of a platform for a benchmark, so to speak, you know, that will begin to address some of these issues and give some of those local communities a direction in which to go you know, help figure out what the next steps are. It's a tall order, given the disparate nature of that system, but as Mike has said, you know, every community will solve it in a different way, but some direction in terms of a benchmark toward which you know, pre-hospital or benchmarks toward which the initial critical component of emergency care can go will be very helpful.
Well, thank you very much. I did want to just compliment everybody on your engagement yesterday. I did find it very, very fascinating that everyone around the room actually spoke up. And I know we're not a shy group, so it's really not much of a shock. But I do appreciate your feedback. Ron?
I just add to what Art was saying, though. I think if it's going to work, which as we heard, it's been a long time. It's you know, late 60s. We're going on 50 years, and we haven't made much of a dent in this problem. In addition to benchmarks, because I think it should go from the ground up, is to provide and ensure the joint accountability that we were talking about yesterday. That's something that's really been missing from the program. Is that the hospitals have been able to dissociate themselves from having to work with the pre-hospital providers because that joint accountability has never been in the system before. And I think that without that component, it's still going to be very difficult to get the change that we need to have made.
That's good point. Skip?
I'd like to explore this, do it from the ground up, and let every community find its own way just a little bit, because that seems quite different from the way the rest of healthcare is approached. When we hit the hospital door, we start dealing with national consensus standards. We start dealing with strong centralized regulation and requirements from CMS. And I'm wondering why our colleagues think that the pre-hospital community should be held to standards that are homegrown or not at all or something.
I think the issue isn't those of us who work in hospitals would maybe not agree, but I think most of them would, that this top-down approach of imposing standards doesn't really actually result in improved quality, which is sort of why the National Quality Forum exists, because we went for many, many years with saying, well, if you just have this and that and the other thing, then patients are going to get great care. And it's not about that. It's about actually holding people accountable for the kind of care that they deliver. And when, as Dr. Martinez pointed out yesterday, you know, I too remember making many phone calls trying to get some cardiologist interested in taking care of a STEMI patient. And I was like, I don't know, got a golf date, whatever, can't do that. And suddenly, within 1 month, the idea that the hospital was going to look bad in the local paper because their door to balloon time wasn't good, problem solved. It was making them accountable for the actual outcomes for the patients, or a process measure that was tightly linked to outcomes.
I'm not disagreeing with that, but they didn't tell us
how to solve that problem. They didn't say, well, you need to have no pre-hospital 12 lead, and you need to have this, and you need to have that.
But they told you that the problem needed to be solved.
Right.
And I think I watched the same changes in behavior that you did, and it came right after the announcement came out that CMS or somebody else was going to publish exactly that performance, and that was from my view, an externally imposed top-down performance standard. You will do this. It wasn't something somebody invented locally and decided this was a great way to do it.
Sure, but they didn't tell us like how many interventional cardiologists we had to have.
No.
I think there's a kind of a fine line there between identifying the issue and bringing attention to it versus being, you know, so prescriptive that you have to have 12 ambulances staffed by 3 paramedics or whatever. So we'll have to be mindful of that as we proceed today, but I think both sides kind of have merit there. So any other comment as we begin to get into our small groups? I'm going to turn it over to Sally for some introductory remarks, and then we're going to talk about the domains again with UNC.
First off, I apologize. I think I've been late for 3 meetings, but I don't know what happens in this area when it starts to rain, but people lose their minds. So I got stuck trying to get in here. It took much longer. It's usually only a 10-minute trip for me, so I apologize to all of you. I did hear a lot of comments yesterday and some real important common themes, at least I thought, and I wanted to bounce them off of all of you and give you an opportunity to react to some of the notes that I jotted down. I heard a call for us to make sure we're explicitly incorporating this concept of population health. I think all of you understand that it's there, but making sure as we reach out to a broader audience that we're being very explicit about that. Acknowledging that emergency care is part of the entire healthcare system, and that we can't necessarily make huge strides in making it effective and efficient if the rest of the healthcare system is not as well. So I don't think there was a call for us to change any of our approaches, but to make sure that we're acknowledging that that is true. A call for leadership, a need for national and local leadership to keep these types of improvements moving. I also heard an interesting discussion about looking at the model, and that with emergency care, that we think about that phase 3 in the episode of care and loop back into the community or the population health. I thought that was very important and interesting concept that came out of this group. And then I think the more blunt comment was the call for us to add a new domain. It was been called the sixth domain, but I think it's the new first domain around access and capacity. So I think we walked away yesterday with a lot of really important changes to our approach and the document, and really appreciate the thoughtfulness. We're very excited that we've gotten this far in just one day, and we're really looking forward today to kicking around the domains that we have and improving them and making sure that we have the domains and subdomains as they should be. So, again, to echo Andy's comments, yesterday was fantastic. I really heard a lot of important contributions and updates that we need to make, and we're really looking forward to doing that. And I know that Jeff and Chuck have already been working on revising some of the definitions and updating the guiding principles. But I think we came to a really good point yesterday with a lot of agreement of what we still need to do with the framework.
So if we're ready, we can begin the roast of Chuck, day two. If our guy went up and soaked in the bathtub, we beat him up so bad yesterday. But, as you know, Chuck, none of this is personal. You know that. We're all having fun. So I believe you guys have... revise some definitions, and then we'll talk about some of the domains and provide a little recap of yesterday from your perspective. So I'll turn it over to you guys.
So thank you all again. No, we found the session very productive yesterday. It reflected a little bit of the evolution that we hadn't thought as we've been interacting with NQF and understanding the development of measures. And frankly, I thought it was really extraordinary kind of insights into how both emergency care is perceived, how it can be measured, and how we think of it as a system, especially in this regionalized context. So I thought it was very valuable. So two charges this morning. The first one was to go over some revised definitions, and I thank Jeff yet again for extraordinary work on this. The second one is to introduce this new domain. So let's start with the definitions. So in this case, we've got regionalization and regionalization of emergency care services, and taking Dr. Mayer's suggestions and comments, we're really just going to collapse them. So the first comment is we're going to look at regionalization, and then we're going to look at this key definition of regionalized emergency medical care services as an inclusive term. And then I guess the question is, What should be key definitions? What should be glossary terms? The idea here is that in most of the NQF frameworks, there are key definitions as a component to the report, but we heard the valuable suggestion yesterday to include a glossary of terms. And clearly, I think that units of service, centralization, there were a number of other medical specific terms, ED overcrowding, Kathy, that I heard, boarding. I think that anything that is specialty specific or you know, kind of used in a jargon or this kind of vernacular really needs to be defined. Sir?
What happened to systems of care? Did we decide? I mean, Kellen is not here, so we can do what we want today.
That's fair enough. So, Rick, we put them all together. If you think there'd be value in keeping it separate as a system of care, we certainly could.
I thought yesterday it was a separate issue only because it went into greater detail what it is. It's a collection of processes, blah, blah, blah. And I thought it built it out, but I don't care. I just didn't see it disappearing yesterday, that's all.
How about this, Rick? We put up the proposed key definition of regionalized emergency medical care services and see the complements or opportunities for extension to a systems of care definition.
Yeah, The committee can correct me on that. I don't recall it us getting rid of that. We rolled some things up. Was that the issue, was to roll all that into one definition? Is that it? Was that the proposal?
That was certainly the post-meeting discussion that we had with our colleagues.
Yeah, I don't think that we ever actually fully resolved the issue. I know some were leaning towards eliminating it, and some were kind of leaning towards keeping it in. So I think they've done a good job at revamping and reworking some of these. So maybe we should just see what we have here before we get too far.
Well, before we go too far, though, I agree. I thought we were going to, since the verbiage of regionalization and system were virtually the same, I thought you were just going to collapse them. But you changed it to services from system.
Ron, I think we'd like to just see what these definitions are, and then we can go back and clarify the moniker after we see the definition. Is that fair enough?
Skip?
While we're painfully wordsmithing, I think it's wise to keep the system or whatever we're talking about in the plural, because if you move to the singular, then you're talking about at least a flavor of centralization or central authority or something, which I think we're trying not to do.
Great point, Skip. You know, we played around with system versus systems in multiple aspects of the document, and I think that's why it'd be valuable to at least go over these definitions and see where we are and where we find intersection with yesterday's and where we'll bring them back.
I know in Greater Raleigh this week the fight is over whether there will be one system or two systems, so very timely as the scuds fly back and forth between Chapel Hill and Raleigh.
Well, one thing, though, is that clearly you can have an overriding system on a modeling perspective, and you could have a system of systems as part of that technical model.
Chuck, one of the other things that we talked about yesterday that I don't know if it was properly captured, and it didn't have to do with terms and definitions, but it had to do with more of a concept of sort of describing the milieu in which healthcare would be occurring. And John did that quite, I think it was John that brought up the idea of the horizontal elements and the vertical elements in a system or set of systems that overlap, and that along the horizontal axis is sort of the baseline regional kinds of concepts that you would have, with everyone having at least a certain minimum level of care that's provided or competence, and then going towards the thought of the vertical elements being allowing more subspecialized and very beefy tertiary kinds of care, and how the patient would work through the system both on a horizontal and in a vertical sense. And Sally sort of talked about it, saying that we would want to have arms where we were more beefy in exactly what the patient would be getting, and then arms that maybe are a little more rudimentary in describing what would be the basics that everyone would need to provide. And depending on the level of expertise that the patient needs, they would move both horizontally and vertically within the system. And I think it was John's concept, if I'm not mistaken. But I think as an overarching sort of planning principle or a concept for how patients would move horizontally and vertically within the system, dependent upon what their individual needs would be and whether they would be cared for on the regional or on a horizontal basis or have to seek, you know, a more higher level of care within the vertical axis, would be something you could grid out.
Thank you, Kathy. In fact, I think that one of the ways we talked about illustrating that would be to have a generic episode of care for regionalized emergency medical services and incorporate the phase one components that are basic to all regionalized medical care services, the phase two components of phase three. Frankly, I like the split to a phase four. So phase three would be in hospital, a phase four would be outside. I think that was Dr. Carr. And I think that having that across the various generic episode of care for regionalized emergency medical services, I think it would be the way to illustrate that concept. That would then allow for condition-specific, whether that's symptom-based or whether that's disease-based, episodes to then be generated for more directed conditions.
Right, because obviously the fidelity of what resources are brought to bear on that patient are dependent upon the expertise that's looking at that. So you would have, you know, symptoms or chief complaints along sort of the basic level, and then as you get more and more information about that patient, whether it's through testing or more sophisticated examiners looking at this patient, you then would be getting, you know, a beefier sort of snapshot of what's going on with them and what are the exact treatments that need to be brought to bear on that patient. So even this level of sophistication of the people that are interacting with that particular patient encounter or that particular patient would be variable dependent upon what information you had at hand. Sometimes it's just the dispatcher asking a bystander, is the patient breathing? I mean, those are sort of very basic kinds of interactions that allow you to gain some data and then move the patient further down the continuum.
So one thing that we could think about, Sally, and this would just be a question maybe on the episode of care model, is you have a phase one. Phase two is where the episode begins. Phase two could either have different units of service, like a pre-hospital, which could even be split into community response versus EMS response, then emergency department response. In our model, phase two also could include acute care areas of hospitals. And then a phase three would be in-hospital specialty care or transferred to a definitive care facility if the patient were transferred. And then the phase four would be post-hospital care, potentially interventions for prevention and rehabilitation and things. Is it better, you think, to continue the phases out and say, okay, phase one is pre-episodic care. The first phase is in literally kind of in the sequence, so community response and EMS, emergency department, hospital, post-hospital. Or are we getting too many phases?
I think that is definitely intriguing. The other question, though, is at what point do they go get integrated back into phase one? So I wonder if this idea of phase four isn't the component that puts them back into phase one, which is the population at risk, which is pretty much the community, because anyone at given time has the potential to require emergency care, if I'm thinking about this right. So I think it's important to capture this piece. I'm not so convinced that it needs to be a phase four versus part of phase one, but I mean, clearly all of you have that contribution. So I don't think we don't want to limit the thinking of the group to this episode-based model. It's meant to be something to spur you into how the model will work. So I think we should play around with it.
So just one quick response. I see John's. I see a number of cards going up. So I would modify based on that comment that maybe phase one is going to have a loop to a phase four. Number two, phase two could be, a potential phase two would be the out-of-hospital component. Phase three would be the in-hospital component. And phase four would be the post-hospital care.
Phase two is in the traditional part of it is where the condition is identified.
Right? Fair enough. So we should collapse still the units of service of out of hospital and emergency department care still in phase two. Phase three can be this hospital based, and then the question is it a phase four or is it a stratified phase four, phase one?
And I wonder if it's really not trajectories that are coming out of the phases, and whether or not we need a phase four or not, because do all emergency situations end up going into an acute hospital setting, or can some not be resolved in the emergency department? So I think the phases are when we have the potential for it to be resolved in different ways, maybe those are trajectories off of the model versus the actual phase three that someone may or may not.
I hear your point.
I'm not saying no. I just think that we are right to think about how this model applies. So
just for the benefit of the group, so what we're talking about, it's in one of the model episode of care frameworks, severity will determine a trajectory out of phase two. And if I hear you correctly, this would be an opportunity. So one of the trajectories would lead to acute hospitalization or transfer or some other event. Another part of the trajectory could be to, but then unfortunately you don't have to worry about the episode of care.
Or phase three. I mean, I just want to push it a little bit. I think we should kick it around. I don't know that it's kind of hard to
Fair enough.
Yeah.
We could put together this graphic based on these concepts, Kathy, to take to incorporate the discussion that various units of service are going to have different levels of information and different levels of interventions that would be important, but that the overall theme of integration across those services, including communication, including disposition, including integrating the care that's available across those different units for an episode of care will be important components of any generic episode of care.
Well, we always want to remember, and we don't have the little picture up there, but at any point in the system, whether the patient is in phase 1, 2, or 3, if someone dies or if someone gets better or there was a misdiagnosis and the patient got sent home, whether that was right or wrong, those are sentinel, in my opinion, sentinel events, and those are ones where you learn the most about the system and you learn the most about your sophistication of care. And so we sort of dispense with them and go, well, we really want to know about the people that go all the way through because we think we learn the most. I would caution us to make sure we have measures to look at the people who fall out of that or don't ever, maybe even the people that don't ever get included from the outset.
Well, I think one of the key components that illustrates that concept is if we were to go to conditions like symptom-based care, and Jesse was bringing that up yesterday, that clearly not all people who have chest pain are going to have acute myocardial infarctions. In fact, the vast majority won't. And so understanding that interaction across an episode of care will be very important, specifically if the performance measures are linked to AMI and not to chest pain. And so understanding that dynamic will be very important because clearly there will be resource utilization issues, cost, capacity of the system, and a lot of other components that'll come into play.
Let's just go around and knock off some of the comments, and we'll just work our way this way. Go ahead, John.
Just a couple of comments. One is that what Sally's articulating very well, in fact, is the public health model for the system of care for time-sensitive injury and illness. And that's really a drive-home message in the HRSA document of 2005. And the phases of care do match up with this. And we talk about trauma systems, but honestly, it's just a disease-based system of care for a time-sensitive condition. And you can just plug in any diagnosis you want on top of it. But the requirements when we go out and look at a system of care that deals with injury as a time-sensitive condition is that you have to actually define the public health and the population. You have to define the epidemiology of the condition, in this case injury, in the population. You have to actually educate the community about it. You have to have primary and secondary prevention in physician. You have to have access to care through 911 and dispatch of ground to air units. You have to have a plan that of where they're going to go. And all that stuff really gets into phase one. And then when the first provider reaches them, then you actually begin phase two. And that includes a variety of out-of-hospital emergency medical personnel. And they eventually get to a receiving area, which could be a burn unit, an obstetrical unit, an emergency department, whatever it happens to be. And then they get maybe an operation, and they might go to an ICU, and then you follow them into the convalescent phase, which might actually cross over to phase three. And then some of them go to rehab, and some of them go to LTAC, and some of them go home. And then at the end, there has to be a data system to record their outcomes and to link them back to
the structure response in phase one.
To mitigate that activity in going forward.
And modify the risk.
That's exactly right. And that's really what the discipline of the disease specific system of care for injury has been doing since 1966. And in a certain sense, you know, I'm trying to let this unfold because this is a creative process, but you're recreating a wheel here. You know, and I hate to say that, but you are recreating a wheel. I mean, a lot of this terminology has already been nailed down and is in, it's not just in publication, but it's actually in congressional law and other sorts of things. They call things systems. They don't call them services. So I'll stop there. And I've emailed some important documents to important people in the room, and I'll come back around and say some more things later.
Yeah, I think John's comments, of course, are right on the mark. I agree with him completely. I'll just add two thoughts here. I think as we think about the episode of care model, you know, Sally's comments about how different patients may follow different trajectories through the model is absolutely correct. But when we're talking about an individual patient, when we're talking about individual health as opposed to population health, we may be thinking about a linear model, okay? But when we're talking about population health, we're really talking about a cyclic model, okay, in the sense that Ron Mayer just mentioned, okay? In other words, the data that we gather from the aggregate data that we gather from the experiences of several patients that are going through that episode of care model feeds back, okay, from the last phase to the first phase, whatever number you're talking about. And in terms of performance improvement, it's a big, you know, performance improvement cycle. It's the PCDA cycle, you know, if you want to think of it that way. It's just, it's, you know, because the data is just going around and around. So the, we're in this is really the chain of survival. Only the aggregate data from the chain of survival, you know, links back. It doesn't go out into infinity. It actually links back on itself, you know, to the beginning, so that you have the kind of feedback in terms of the system and the risk modification that Ron Mayer was just talking about. So I think as we think about episodes of care, we have to understand that it's the aggregate experience of populations who are obtaining those episodes of care that link back and modify the entire system.
Just at the risk of repeating myself, not every episode of care that begins with a contact to a 911 center needs to end up with a patient in a hospital. That there are a number of other trajectories, and I like the term, but they don't all end one further step up the healthcare system.
Just a little different, but building on the idea of making sure that what we do builds on the past and kind of strengthens it. The one thing you mentioned earlier, I'm not sure we've incorporated too much, but as we go to maybe the next steps we're going to do, is I think we need to be mindful of the aims of quality, and so that we put things in those terms in a way. I mean, a lot of these measures we're talking about are efficiency measures. They're measures on timeliness, effectiveness, patient centeredness, that sort of thing. And it's funny because, you know, even things like equitable are going to come out in the cost issue, the winners and losers within the system.
The other piece that I think that we need to make sure that we keep on the radar is that we could draw this, you know, whether it's the HRSA trauma injury system circle or the episodes of care, they're pretty analogous, I think, in many ways. But I strongly think that we shouldn't be drawing, as Sally mentioned yesterday, 14 of them for each of the domains of each emergency care symptom condition that we're willing to regionalize. And I don't know how we get around that. I mean, this is one of the pieces that, you know, trauma's got a long track record of doing this. And as, you know, we've now seen the American Heart Association put out a call for proposals for regionalized STEMI systems, regionalized cardiac arrest systems, regionalized stroke systems. And, you know, I mean, it's an interesting thing. It's a parade of disease conditions. And I don't want us to be stuck in this model where we don't recognize the synergy that can happen from learning from each other and building pieces together.
Well, I put my flag up 4 commenters ago. Where we were in the discussion at that point in time was comparing the phase 3 and phase 1 and how you transition. And my thought at the time was, that doesn't really work for the community paramedic model where the the community paramedic isn't serving a phase one purpose, they're serving a phase three purpose, where the episode, it's hard to define when the episode is ending and when it's continuing or restarting. And so I would just encourage us to be mindful of that. Some of the work that the community paramedics are doing is still evolving, and it's still, they're still finding their way. But many of the things that they're doing are preventing people from coming back into phase one. So having an allowance for that would be good.
I wanted to expand on Kathy's comment a little while ago. As we look in communities, I think it's essential that we be able to seek a way to find these people that fall out of the system. I know, you know, an EMS service, you know, you send an ambulance on the call, and for whatever reason, the patient stays home, and an hour later you're going back out there and they've had another event. They don't always go to the same hospital either. And when you're making a second run on a patient who has already been in and out of a hospital, and they've got some event, and now I'm not going there anymore, don't take me there, there needs to be a way to connect those people so that you can find where the system failed and fix it. And that's a moving target, but I think it's incredibly important.
Well, these are all great comments. In the interest of time, I'd like to get back to the definitions and get that done. We're about 9:35 now. So, Chuck, why don't we run through the definitions? We'll refresh on the domains, and then we do need to get into our small groups to keep on the schedule for today.
Very good, Andy. So if we could just go to the next slide. So here's regionalization. The key change is the last line, to a defined population of patients. So regionalization, the concept of an established network of resources that delivers specific care, for example, protocols, definitive procedures, higher care levels, or care pathways, that is not universally available in the out-of-hospital setting, for example, a physician's office, or in some acute care hospitals, to a defined population of patients. And this is really per Art Kellerman's suggestion yesterday. Again, keeping this concept that regionalized care does not equal centralized care. This is now this kind of amalgamation of definition for regionalized emergency medical care services. This is going to just focus in on the services. A deliberate and planned system of both in and out-of-hospital resources that delivers care to a defined population of patients who have conditions for which rapid diagnosis and early intervention for acute illness or injury improves patient outcomes. And a key change here, other than the amalgamation, is the incorporation of Dr. Carr's emergency conditions language. A regionalized system of care may exist to serve a particular geographic area, patient population, or disease condition. This is kept. The out-of-hospital component of regionalized emergency medical care services may be represented by the pre-hospital, i.e. field EMS, recognition of a time-sensitive condition, and initiation of a system of care, or it could also be represented by the transfer of a patient for specialty care within a regionalized network. This is new language now. When unscheduled episodic care of varying levels of acuity is provided in both in-hospital and out-of-hospital settings of regionalized emergency medical care services, the focus of this project is on measuring systems of care for time-critical, life-threatening clinical conditions. Nonetheless, the effectiveness and capacity of regionalized emergency medical care services is determined at least in part by the system's ability to deliver emergency care while non-emergency care is also provided to other patients. So the key concepts in addition there were just these ideas of non-emergent care, the fact that it will affect the performance of emergency care, and to provide a context of the system of care in which regional emergency medical services are provided.
The one comment I have is a potential an amendment that we would, where we say life-threatening, to put in some language around about potentially life-threatening that would include chest pain and acute myocardial infarction as what we're trying to tackle. So we could focus also on diagnostic centers to risk stratify along with the patients who actually have AMI.
I don't know what Art said yesterday, but the language in the very first definition of renalization ends with the word patient. And I don't know that that's true. I think it's to a defined population. I mean, they're potential patients until something happens to them. And I think that's an important, the population health people, I think, they think we're weird because we call everybody patients. And then the second piece I want to say is that the emergency care sensitive condition piece, that emergency care sensitive condition isn't my language. That came from my partners at HRQ because they were mirroring something that already exists, which is the ambulatory care sensitive conditions that's recognized. So if we want to, I'm not wedded to it, and clearly the committee should decide, but if we want to draw the parallel to ambulatory care-sensitive conditions, we should call them emergency care-sensitive conditions, not time-sensitive, not emergency care conditions, or, the sort of the variants that are mixed in here.
Fair enough. I guess we're trying to synthesize it into this approach, though, for regionalization.
I hate wordsmithing, but on the definition, I think it's the next one. Back up. Disease condition. I mean, the care system is for the geographic area or patient population who may have a specific disease condition. To me, we're providing a system that treats people, not disease.
Just for that specific point, I think somebody brought up the analogy of like you got one hand surgeon, he defines his population because he's the only show in town, and so it's totally disease driven.
So resource picking. So if you only have one person who can deliver a baby.
My point was that it was resource driven. So if you only have one person around who can deliver a baby, then that drives it to the resource.
Isn't it still the person with the cut off hand that we're seeking to serve?
Yeah, my other comment, just in general, about a lot of this stuff is I think we all understand what this is, but when I can imagine showing this to someone who doesn't really. It doesn't really think of it in this area, and this language is, I think, very complex and is very jargony. I know we were talking about having a glossary, but it may be helpful to show some of this to someone who hasn't thought about this and make sure that this is understandable to them, because just on the surface, it seems pretty complicated.
Thank you for that comment, and. Not only will we try and avoid jargon as much as possible, but the document will be posted for public and member comment. So I will, encourage all of you, and we certainly do a lot of outreach to make sure that folks are taking a look at it and providing us comments, including such as it's filled too much with jargon. So that is a very important point that we should keep in mind.
I worry sometimes that we focus too much on the STEMIs and that sort of stuff, and the system, to me, the capacity of the system really shows its underbelly with the patients who don't fall into that category. If you look at the CDC data, they'll show you only about 8 to 12% of the patients shouldn't be in the ER. They actually are so minor, they shouldn't be there. In other words, this idea of what's an emergency versus not is more than those life-threatening right in front of you. It's the lack of access to time creates the emergency. And a good example I see all the time is an asthma patient. Asthma patient can be a little short of breath because they don't have their medications and they're having an episode. The longer they wait, the worse they get, and you can get to the life-threatening aspect of it. So the capacity of the system really reflects in its ability to deliver the resources to that patient. We've actually built a very bizarre system now. We have two things. We have a fast track, and we have the rest of the ER. And if you have nothing wrong with you, we have a place for you, right away. And if you're really sick, we have a place for you. If you're a level 3, headache, abdominal pain, or shortness of breath, you wait in that waiting room till you call CNN eventually, and, you know, they show the videos. But that's what happens. So I worry a little bit about us making sure that we identify that they are time-sensitive and could become, as opposed to, you know, they're emergent, and then we should still be able to take care of the non-emergent, because I don't consider them non-emergent, those other patients. I consider them needing acute care. Yeah, and it's a real dilemma. How do you frame that? I just worry about that, because if you look at screening out programs, the most they can do is 8 to 10%, because that's what happens. So we're talking a real small minority of it non-emergency.
Kind of back to our comments on the first paragraph on the screen. It seems that a lot of that was captured maybe on the slide before, and I wonder if it's going to confuse the issue and everything like that. Do we even need that paragraph? No, not the one on the next slide, the one that we talked about the disease conditions and that. I mean, it's kind of repetitive. We've said a lot of that in the definitions before. Do we really even need that paragraph in there? I'm not sure what the value added is, and if it's going to create debate and potentially confuse people, maybe we should just eliminate it. I don't know. Ron votes yes. Thoughts on that?
On the attempt to capture everything, it's becoming a bit rambling. And again, it's very difficult, I agree, to you know, what we just heard from Rick, you know, the challenges are there, and they need to be addressed. The question is, how much do you put in the short definition?
Right. And there's certainly numerous documents other people can look at, and this isn't the be-all, end-all of regionalization. And we try to, I think, point that out by referencing a lot of the great documents that have come before, and I'm sure many that will come after. So I just wanted, for the sake of brevity, and if people want to learn more on regionalization, perhaps there's other venues they can do that in, and this may not be appropriate. I don't know. Thoughts on that, John?
I have to agree with you. In synthesizing documents like this, the goal should be to deliver it at the sixth grade literacy level, like USA Today does. So if you can't actually explain this to a sixth grader in the elevator going to the third floor, then you missed it.
And you know, obviously, these are slides, and so that the words aren't up there the way they appear in print, and it's really more of the concepts. But I hear what you're saying, John. I mean, now, clearly, it's got to be language that's understandable. Clearly, it's got to minimize jargon, and clearly, it's got to be consistent with the language that we've discussed within the rest of the framework.
Okay, I think we've...
And I would say that it has to be consistent with the historical path that this discipline of thought has taken, too. So it's congruent.
Absolutely.
Well, it certainly has to recognize it.
All right. I'd like us to move on, if we could, just to the domains, so we can get into the small groups. Ron, you got one burning issue.
Let's go back to your first, to that first title slide, number two. We really are talking about a regionalized system. You can make it systems if you want. It's not services.
Ron, did you like the systems of care slides from yesterday?
Yeah, the systems of care. I don't know which one you were talking about.
Is it possible to pull that one up?
But all I'm saying is yesterday we had regionalized care and then we had systems of care.
Right.
And they seem to be saying exactly the same thing with different words. But I think the concept that we're going after is regionalized care systems, not regionalized care services, which is what you changed it to. That's all I'm pointing out.
Thank you, sir. We need to add the word systems. We will.
That's all I'm saying is
I gotcha. Remember, the way that the project was entitled for the RFP was Regionalized Emergency Medical Care Services Systems, and we're going to add the word systems. And then we'll refer to it after we get past that title aspect and initial line to Regionalized Emergency Care Systems.
Right.
Is that fair enough?
Yes.
In the document? So we meet both mandates.
Yes.
No, I heard you, Ron. Thanks.
Because I realize that you go on to define those services on both sides as systems.
Right.
Hence, you can see the reconciliation between the two charges.
EMSS. How about that?
Right. That's right. But in the rest of the language, we'll use the word systems. If that's acceptable to, at least in the next draft, for review by our partners.
We'll figure it out. Absolutely.
Thank you. So the next charge was to look at a review of the domains. You'll see we added a new domain. Its current proposed title is Capability, Capacity, and Access. We kept the rest of the domains as we discussed. Next slide. So here's the new domain one, Capability, Capacity, Access. There's a need to understand the capability, workforce, and resources of a regionalized emergency medical care services within a region to provide emergency care. Again, forgive some of the language here. We'll get the document in place, you know, to make it more closer to English, acceptable English, and I like the sixth grade level guys. Second, second paragraph. Capacity can change rapidly. Therefore, the measurement of a real-time capacity of this system to provide timely emergency care is important. The third, reasons can vary widely in the access to care, either for defined population or within a defined geography. So that would be kind of the outline, and again, forgive the language, the outline for this capability, capacity, access. And so the distinguishing features are there's going to be a capability, but that doesn't mean that the capacity is necessarily there. It's a dynamic, and clearly how that capacity is then accessible to the population is another important component. Domain 2 remained essentially the same. Domain 3, we kept this the first one the same for resource utilization, recognizing, though, that a lot of the resources for infrastructure, for capability, capacity, are going to now be captured in Domain 1. We decided to refine the second paragraph to include structural and process components of regionalized emergency medical care that catalog facility, specialty consultants, and advanced service resources. So this was the idea that we were discussing yesterday on specialty, and frankly it came up again this morning about specialty availability, capacity, and advanced care availability. Domain 4 remained the same. Domain 5 remained the same. And domain 6, we kept it the same, Rick, recognizing that for the principals, that patient-oriented processes and outcomes appears to be a very important language to include. Since this domain's entitled outcomes, we kept patient-oriented outcomes, but played around with the idea of adding processes and outcomes to that first sentence. Or we could just keep it in the guiding principle. In the guiding principles, we talked about how there should be patient-oriented outcomes as a key component. There was a lot of discussion both yesterday and today to capture patient-oriented processes and outcomes as a guiding principle. So that's the language that we've been changing for the guiding principle for the next draft. This is a discussion now of the domain of outcomes. And the question is whether or not to include patient-oriented processes and outcomes as a key component to the domain. Now, one may argue, and I think effectively, that patient-oriented outcomes are clearly going to be linked to processes. And so these things are not, it's going to encompass processes. question is whether or not we want to emphasize it in the language of the domain. Is that fair enough?
Go ahead.
Yeah, because now we're at outcomes. I just want everyone to realize, at least the thought behind this, again, this is just for your draft consideration, is that we really wanted to be sure we focused in on what's important.
Can I ask, can you go back to where you had that, the processes? Multiple times people have said the way you get things to happen is you have a goal, and the goal is not people should live. The goal is like we're going to get them to the operating room in such and such a period of time. That's our goal, right? That's our process goal. STEMI, our time with EMS, all those things. So I think it's going to be the thing that we're going to measure to see differences rather than outcomes. Outcomes are sometimes really hard to see. So where is it in here? Back.
I think the idea is just linking those processes to outcomes. So the component of this domain is to recognize what are the important outcomes we're trying to achieve.
So this is the output side.
Okay. Yeah. Clearly understanding that the actual measures may involve processes linked to those outcomes, and clearly recognizing that this whole system is going to be geared towards outcomes, at least its evaluation. So the focus of the domain was really on outcomes.
Just a couple comments. I would remind us to put things like capability and capacity in a glossary of some sort so people can understand the differences between those things. And I guess the other thing I'm not seeing in our domains, and maybe I'm just still not awake yet this morning, but I don't see an allusion to feedback process improvement where the system is learning from itself. Every patient encounter or all of the things we're devising are intended to hopefully make our next patient encounter better, more efficient, more effective. And I don't know which domain that should fall in. Maybe it's the outcomes one, but I think there needs to be a strongly worded comment somewhere in there that talks about we're trying to do better each time, and the way we do that is because we're informed about what we did the last time or the last 20 times, or maybe the last patient that didn't do so well, maybe the last patient that should have come to the tertiary center but didn't. Those ones that fall out, the sentinel events and how we're sort of learning from ourselves, I don't know that that's captured quite yet.
I think it's an important process, you know, kind of the quality management construct. And again, there are four different ways that we evaluate measures, and included in that will be, you know, a quality construct, as has been alluded to. So I think quality is the important goal. I think the management piece will be, we could put in suggestive processes or put it into that framework. You know, frankly, when you talk about units of service in an episode of care, you're into a quality management construct.
I think it could probably go on all these, but I think it definitely needs to be addressed, you know, throughout this whole process. So I think that's a very valid point. We'll make sure we get that incorporated. Let's wrap up with some comments, and then we'll get into the small groups. So we've got Rich, we've got Gary, and Art. I'm sorry, I didn't see you over there.
Just a brief comment. I think this is a pretty remarkable endeavor, and the work that's been done has been really good. Good work out of a void. One of the questions I have is about the juxtaposition of access and capacity and how you would define those with a unit of measurement or not, because they're so interrelated and they can be perceived so differently.
So I think one of the concepts that was discussed yesterday, it's okay if I briefly respond. I think one of the concepts that we were trying to synthesize with that is that capability of the system can vary widely, but is an important kind of key structure. If you don't have a specialist, or if you don't have an EMS system, or if you don't have a destination hospital, that's really important, and understanding the parameters around those could be valuable. A second piece is that the capacity of that capability can rapidly change. Demand would be one thing, for example. Infrastructure compromise would be another component that could influence that. Or a lack of availability of providers could alter what the capacity of a capable system is. And then the third component of access is how that the patients actually are able to access such a system. You may have a system that's capable, that has the capacity, but if patients can't intersect, for example, 911 doesn't direct them, they don't have access to 911, or they're a vulnerable population without that first initial communication link, then clearly there would be a compromise in access to a capable system with capacity. Hey, but that was the initial thoughts on how we might put those things together, because we heard so many, we heard a lot of discussion yesterday about the key components to access. We talked about the challenge of capacity, but we also heard and recognized the wide variation in capability, say rural versus urban system, rich versus poor. And we've already talked about specialty distribution, heterogeneity. Those are the thoughts.
Could you go back to domain 3? Is that one intended to only include hospital components?
No.
That's what it does, I think.
I think we could certainly add one of catalog services. But again, remember the language for the slides is different, going to be the language in the text. But we absorb your comment that we need to be sure we have the out-of-hospital components. Although in the new domain one, just to be sure, a lot of the phase one, some of the phase one things regarding EMS are going to be captured in the new domain one under capability. Is that okay? This is more about resource matching.
Sorry. Going back to our new domain one, this may be not wordsmithing, but perhaps concept smithing. I think that your last sort of response got at the notion that the underlying principle here is access, and that access is limited both by entry into the system and by the ability of the system to respond to that need. So I would begin, I think we really want to begin with access rather than begin with capability. Second, as the terms capability and capacity have evolved over the last several years, particularly in the disaster medicine world, as all of us know, generally speaking, capacity refers to stuff in space, and capability refers to staff, the capability to actually operate that stuff in space to the benefit of the patient. So I think we need to be very careful with those terms because they may be misconstrued, and I think we should probably try to be congruent to the extent that we can, with the way they are being used in the, in the larger world. So I would talk about this set of concepts in terms of access first, capacity second, and then last, the capability to actually operate that system to the benefit of the patient. So in other words, this is if you want to think of it this way, the access capacity capability is another way of thinking about input, throughput, and output, in different words. That is why I'm glad Sally suggested this earlier, that it's such an overarching first domain rather than a last domain.
Well put.
All right, I'm going to turn it over to Sally, who's going to talk about the group activities. We're going to break into small groups at 10:15, and we'll do that for an hour, and then we'll reconvene in the big group. So Eric and Sally will give us some guidance and some direction on how we're going to proceed.
Thanks, Andy. So this is the opportunity to really kick around these domains. We want you to go to your groups, and I think we'll do group one here. Group two can stay in the middle, and group three at that table over there. There are some broad questions that we're asking you to think about. It includes the now fixed domains, making sure that the group discusses whether or not the proposed domains still make sense based on all the conversations that have taken place, if there are any other missing domains. And then also take a little bit of time to think about the overlap among domains, and I'm sure there are some, but whether there's an opportunity to collapse or combine any of those. We're fine with six domains, but spend a little time thinking about that. And then depending on which group you're in, we have a set of questions that Chuck and Jeff helped us sketch out that we want you to really take a critical view of. So we're going to spend about how much time in the groups? Eric, 1 hour, and then come back and ask one of you from your group to discuss what you guys decided upon in that hour with the rest and get the committee's reactions. A goal here is really for us to walk away with a good final set of domains and subdomains, and if you think about these subdomains and the domains, they certainly touch all parts of the episode of care that we've been talking about. The reason why they're so helpful is it really informs the measured developers and users and implementers. It provides them a context to think about these measures. And so you'll see some of them, for example, coordination of care certainly is probably a bar underneath that episode. Others may focus on certain parts of the episode more than that one. But it does provide a lot of context for measuring. So the goal is, as Helen alluded to yesterday, you can almost think of it as a tree, and we're providing the branches, and then our hope is to populate these branches with important assessments, measures of the quality of care that's being provided, if that's helpful. Yes.
The domains we're going to be working with this morning are the ones we just evolved and are different from what we were provided. So I want to make us as efficient and sort of targeted as we can be. Are we going to be given the newly defined domains with sort of their different elements so we can be succinct, or are we working off of what we were given yesterday? Because we've sort of added some things, and I don't want it to get lost because we're working off of information that we had or the domains as we defined them previously.
Thank you, Kathy. I think from what I heard from the changes in the domains, there's general consensus on that. Unfortunately, this was printed out yesterday. Mm-hmm. So my request is exactly that, Kathy, that you think about the domains as they have been revised by the steering committee in the past day and a half. And I think the question should still apply, but if you have other questions, they're really just to help you get going. We're not trying to restrict the conversation at all. We just wanted to do some of the pre-work for you and think about the questions. But as you get together with your group, if you think our questions are way off base, add your own. That would be fun. Yeah.
Just a question. So in these current groups, so group one is going to do detection and identification. Should group one do the capability, access, and capacity domain, or should we each group do that separately?
Our thought was, great question, Jesse, thank you, that we would have Chuck and Jeff work on that because we felt that with a lack of preparation and time for it, it may be difficult, but to the extent that the individual groups want to think about that, if you finish early, that you're more than welcome to do that. But we are going to continue working on that particular domain. We've even gotten input this morning on how to better contextualize it, and that will be something you will see in the next draft. So we'll get your feedback, not necessarily on the subdomains in this meeting, but we'll certainly get your feedback through email and conference calls.
And just in terms of how these groups should be run, should we focus on the specific questions as an outline for the group, or should we focus on some of the language, or have a philosophical discussion? I'm just trying to figure out what we're going to deliver back in an hour.
I think it's really a concrete set of recommendations, looking at the specific questions and really trying to provide any additional key points. Really, it's more of a deep dive, giving each group a chance to focus on each specific domain, and again, printed yesterday, so recognizing that there have been some revisions made already, but diving deep in, coming up with some concrete recommendations and supplementing some of the work done so that we can look at it from maybe a different perspective.
So, thank you, Eric. And so one of our biggest concerns is that we're missing a domain, that we miss a subdomain, or that one of them is not quite right. We have talked about the domains quite a bit as a group. So I think we've come up with the six, but we want to walk away today with what is pretty close to a final set. As far as wordsmithing, you know, I think that that can become very difficult in a group dynamic, but concept smithing, as Art put it, is absolutely what we need. We need enough input to walk away today with the final bunch of domains and subdomains that will then provide this platform for measure developers, people who are building the data platforms. What can we do now, and what do we need to do in order to do what we want in the future? So it's both the here and now and the forward thinking. And if you think about a domain, for example, we might, I do a lot of work in resource use measurement. So there could be a clinical domain of resource use measurement is one way to think about it. And within that, there may be subdomains that are targeting very specific areas of resource utilization. So we're still getting the big picture of what's going on with cardiac heart resources, but then within that there may be clusters of AMI resource utilization versus CHF resource utilization that provide more concrete comparisons within, but clearly we're still interested in the domain as a whole as well. So I don't know if that helps. So It's an important task to get your guys' input on these domains, and so we do want some concrete recommendations back so that Chuck and Jeff can walk away with their charging orders to wrap up the next iteration of the draft of this report.
And I hate to say it again, but I think we need a copy of the most recent determinations on what the domains currently are. Because we're working off of something that's, while not antiquated, it's not quite as well-defined as we had from this morning. And so I think for our groups to be most efficient and to give you the best input we can, I think we ought to have a copy of the new domains. Because I just made little scratchy notes on here. I just want to make sure we're giving you our best effort.
We can put the slide deck on the flash drives and hand those out. Okay, great, thanks. Fine, okay. So, as I said, group one will meet over here at this table. Group two can go ahead and, you know, get together at this larger table, and if group three could go over there, we can go ahead and get started. Eric and I will come around with thumb drives so someone could take a computer with them to each of the tables. That would be great. Sure.
Yeah. We'll
meet back here in 5 minutes.
And for those of you on the phone, it's going to be a little crazy for the next hour or so you may want to check back in an hour when we reconvene.